It's been 5 years since the mass shooting at Santa Fe High School. The man charged with capital murder in the case is yet to stand trial. Demetrios Pagortsis has been in a state-run mental health institution most of that time. His attorney says doctors have been unable to get his client, quote, back to competency, and that the man, quote, lives in a reality that is substantially different than our own. This is an unfortunate and complicated situation that naturally comes up from time to time. A defendant is deemed by the court to be mentally incompetent and so remains under doctor's care in the hopes that someday they will be able to stand trial for their alleged crimes. And there's no limit on how long or how many times a defendant can be recommitted. It leaves victims and their families seeking closure in such cases in limbo. Some argue such delays represent defense attorney overreaching. Others believe we need better laws to address the rights of the severely mentally ill. What's right? What's fair? Let's discuss now with Denise Onken, Bureau Chief in the Harris County District Attorney's Office over the Mental Health and Special Victims Bureaus. She's also Commissioner in the State Judicial Commission on Mental Health. And joining us, Dr. Stephen Coates, Lead Psychologist of the Competency and Sanity Evaluation Unit at the Harris Center for Mental Health and IDD. That stands for Intellectual or Developmental Disability. Denise Onken, Stephen Coates, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm all right. And yourself?
Good.
Denise, let me start with you. How is a defendant's mental competence determined by a court?
Well, first of all, an order is placed and you have to have an expert like Dr. Coates or an individual evaluate the individual to determine if they are competent or not. Some of the things that are looked at are whether or not they can communicate with their defense lawyer, whether they understand what they're charged with, whether they can testify in courts. So those are some of the parameters that you look at to determine whether an individual is competent. Competency is determined at the moment. In other words, you can be competent sometimes and incompetent other times. So you could have been perfectly competent when you committed the crime, but today you are incompetent.
Dr. Coates, in your experience, how much do lawyers and judges rely on the doctors treating a defendant to determine that competence?
Well, typically, so we actually prefer to have the experts that evaluate the defendants not be involved in the treatment. So the expert courts usually want that expert to be a disinterested party. Oh. So now the expert, such as myself, that might evaluate a defendant would want to review medical records, for example, about the defendant from those treatment clinicians. But typically, that expert is going to rely on that information as well as interviewing, observing the defendant, interacting with the defendant, getting information from defense counsel, considering the offense itself and the circumstances of that. We want to know what experience, if any, they've had with criminal legal proceedings in the past that, you know, might inform their knowledge now about those proceedings.
Are there ever instances when a defendant is faking it and just doesn't want to stand trial, or is that the stuff of TV legal dramas?
No, that is a rather common occurrence in this context. And so, you know, the expert being court appointed, so for instance, myself and the staff on my unit, we serve as court appointed experts. We don't have a vested interest in either side of the case. And so we do have a responsibility to carefully consider the defendant's presentation and the information available to us so that when they are feigning or exaggerating, say, symptoms of mental illness, we identify that. And we sometimes have to opine that a defendant is indeed competent to stand trial when the defendant himself might be presenting himself in a different manner.
Denise, in situations like this, do we tend to see prosecutors and defense attorneys and the judge all essentially agree on the defendant's mental state, or do lawyers from each side tend to bring in differing diagnoses from different doctors or other experts, and then it's up to the judge to decide?
Well, it's kind of a combination, but oftentimes we do have the state as well as defense agreeing that maybe a defendant is incompetent for criminal court purposes at that time. And so when they are agreeing, and of course the court, if both parties are in agreement, agrees with that as well, then the defendant can be sent for restitution. restoration. So we do see that more often than not in dealing with defendants who are charged with a criminal offense.
What's more common that once that restoration process ideally begins, that someone is ultimately found mentally competent to stand trial, or do you see more instances where someone goes years and years without it?
No, it's much more common to see them restored to competency. I don't know the percentages off the top. Dr. Coates might know that, but it's very, very common that they are restored to competency once they're stabilized on medication and receive some education in the restoration program.
Do you have a sense, Dr. Coates, as the percentage?
In my experience, I've seen restoration rates as high as 70% to 80%. And I think that can vary from state to state, from hospital to hospital. I think at least regionally here in Southeast Texas in the Houston area, there seems to be what I have found a consistency in the restoration programming that goes on here, so that there's a very robust focus on the use of psychoactive medication, which is almost always necessary to restore a defendant to competency. But there are also some very good education programs and other therapeutic modalities that go on in our restoration programs.
How do you define mental competence or determine it, not just legally, but from a clinical functional point of view? What are we really talking about?
That's a very good question. So competence to stand trial is, of course, a legal standard, and it's defined in Texas in 46B of the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure. It's ultimately derived from a Supreme Court standard, the Dusky Standard. If any of your listeners want to, research that more, look it up. But in Texas, not only do we have the basic definition of competency to stand trial, but there are certain factors that experts have to consider. And these factors have to do with, for instance, a defendant's ability to disclose information, to communicate or convey that information in a meaningful way to their attorney. A defendant's ability to engage in a reasoned choice of legal options. For example, are they interested in pursuing a trial by jury in their case? If so, what might be their reasoning in doing so versus trying to negotiate a plea bargain or pursuing a trial by judge instead of a jury? And we want to see that person to have capacities to have a reasoned choice about that, not a decision that's based on delusional thinking, for example.
Denise, that's the definition or the approach in Texas. Is it radically different from other states?
I'm not really familiar, but I think it's relatively similar in the other states as far as competency. Those are the different factors that are looked at, certainly in our code, the Texas code here. But other states are very, very similar in what they're looking at for competency.
Denise, some people who enter the criminal justice system and are deemed mentally incompetent to stand trial may be accused of relatively minor offenses. In those cases, are there pathways to community reentry short of eventually being deemed competent and standing trial?
Well, one of the things we have here in Harris County, which is really unique in this state and really even across the country, is we have a local mental health diversion center. And what it is we say it's a pre-charge, but it's basically no charges. And let's take an example. We take a low-level criminal offense like trespass. The individual has some type of mental illness. It could be a serious mental illness. They're not in crisis, but law enforcement is called out there. They've met the probable cause elements for committing that crime. But, do they really need to be arrested for a misdemeanor offense, spend a couple of days in jail? Really what they need is some treatment for their mental health, because oftentimes the reason that they're trespassing out there is because they're homeless and they just don't have anywhere to go. So we do have the diversion center here. It's actually run by the Harris Center for Mental Health and IDD, which is our local mental health authority. And when they arrive there or taken there by law enforcement, it's a voluntary program. They're assessed and they can have ongoing case management. So it's an inpatient type facility. They can stay there from a few hours to a few days to a week or so, and then they can be moved on to other kinds of placement.
What impact does that in turn then have on the population of people that are seeking mental health assistance from our public health system.
Well, I tell you what has happened here in Harris County is we started this diversion center, the collaboration with the DA's office, law enforcement, and the local mental health authority back in September of 2018. Since then, we have diverted over 7,500 low-level misdemeanor offenders into the mental health diversion program who've received some great help. There's some great success stories about individuals who once they've gotten help through the diversion center, they never visit the criminal justice system again.
And of course, there's the other extreme, which is the Santa Fe case. Dr. Coates, is there a possibility in that case that we could see that that defendant is never found mentally competent to stand trial and will just always be in treatment?
Well, I can't speak to the specifics of that case. I've not been involved with that case. But I can say that in some cases, there are defendants who have such severe and chronic mental illness that despite our best efforts at treating them, even if they have treatment-resistant schizophrenia, for example, there are some medications that can be used in those, you know, sort of as a last-ditch effort in those cases. And even then, they're not able to respond to that treatment. And indeed, a person with severe mental illness could, you know, eventually, you know, they're not able to be restored. And that does happen in some cases.
Dr. Stephen Coates is the lead psychologist of the Competency and Sanity Evaluation Unit at the Harris Center for Mental Health and IDD. Denise Onken is Bureau Chief in the Harris County District Attorney's Office over the Mental Health and Special Victims Bureau. She's also Commissioner in the State Judicial Commission on Mental Health. Dr. Stephen Coates, Denise Onken, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us today.